What follows is Blood of the Hollow Court, written by Russell Q. Foxley, narrated by Gerald Foss. The book opens now. Prologue. The queen knelt without being forced. Her white gown pooled around her on the marble, and the silk drank the morning light slanting through the high windows of the Hollow Court. She had positioned herself exactly 3 feet from the throne, close enough for the ritual, far enough that she could look up at her husband one last time without craning her neck. King Ashran Aventine did not meet her eyes. He stood beside the throne, still in his coronation robes, the gold thread catching the light. His hands hung at his sides, fingers twitching. The court packed the gallery in their finest velvets and brooches and the sharp perfume of nervous bodies. No one spoke. No one had spoken since the queen had walked through the great bronze doors and said, "I'm ready." The executioner waited at the king's right hand. A woman in a leather apron, her forearms striped with old scars, holding a curved blade that caught the light like a fish's belly. Castellan Dre's father, the previous Castellan, a man whose name no one spoke anymore, stood at the foot of the dais, a silver bowl cradled in his gloved hands. The bowl was ancient, older than the keep, older than the Aventine line. Its surface rippled with engraved veins that matched the throne's own carvings. The throne itself hummed, not a sound you heard with your ears, a vibration in the floor, in the stone of the pillars, in the marrow of every person in that room. The Hollow Throne was hungry. It had been hungry for 3 years, ever since the last tithe, and Ashran Aventine's face showed the cost, gray skin, sunken temples, eyes that had retreated into their sockets like animals seeking caves. "Ashran," the queen's voice carried. She had a singer's training, a diplomat's precision. "Look at me." He did. His eyes were the same pale gray as his father's had been, the same as his son's would be. The capillaries around the irises had burst into tiny red webs. The hollowing process, the court physicians called it, the throne's thirst. "My love," she said, and she smiled. The king's jaw tightened. He stepped forward and the court held its collective breath. "I can't," he said. "You can, you must." She reached up and took his hand, pressed it against her chest. Her heartbeat thrummed against his palm. "The wards are failing. The blight is spreading. You told me yourself. Another season without the tithe and the outer districts will starve. The healers have nothing left." She squeezed his fingers. "You've drained yourself to nothing, feeding the wards on your own blood. You can't hold them alone much longer, and if you fall, the kingdom falls with you." Someone in the gallery sobbed, a woman, quickly muffled. The queen kept her eyes on her husband. "I'm not afraid. You should be." His voice cracked. "You should be terrified. You should be running." "I'm the queen of Astralis. I don't run." She released his hand and turned to the executioner. "When you take the heart, you must lift it clear of the ribs before the fourth beat. If you hesitate, the blood will clot and the throne will reject the offering." She touched her own chest, just below the collarbone. "Here, between the third and fourth ribs, a clean angle." The executioner's face was stone. "I know the cut, Your Grace. I know you do. I watched you train." The queen smoothed her gown over her knees. "I wanted to see what would happen to me." The king made a sound, a wounded thing low in his throat. He dropped to his knees beside her and the court gasped. Kings did not kneel. Kings were knelt to. "I'll find another way," he said. "There must be something. The blood alchemists have been working on synthetics, artificial hearts grown from..." "They've failed for 300 years, Ashran. They'll fail for 300 more." She touched his face, her thumb tracing the hollow of his cheek. "You're the king. You don't get to be weak today." "I'm weak every day. I'm the weakest king in 1,000 years, because I can't do what must be done." "Then let me do it for you." She kissed him, a real kiss, not the formal press of lips that court protocol demanded. Her hand cupped the back of his neck, and for a moment she held him there, and for a moment he let himself be held. Then she pulled back and nodded at the executioner. "Now." The executioner moved. Her blade caught the light. The queen did not scream. She made a sound, a sharp exhale, a gasp of surprise more than pain, and then her hands went to her chest, where the blade had entered, and they came away red. The executioner's second cut was faster than the eye could follow, and she stepped back with the heart cupped in her palm, still beating, still pulsing, veins and arteries trailing like crimson roots.